Welcome to the Conversations with Christians Engaged podcast. I'm your host, Bunny Pounds, the president of Christians Engaged. This ministry exists to awaken, motivate, educate, and empower ordinary believers in Jesus Christ to do three things: to pray for our elected officials in our nation regularly, to vote in every election to impact our culture, and to engage in some form of civic education or involvement for the well-being of our nation.
I'm so thankful, Bunny, for what you do. A lot of people talk the talk, but you really walk the walk.
There's nobody else I want to talk to about Jesus with than you.
And I will stand and lock arms with this woman of God, Bunny Pounds, any day of the week.
Bunny, you are a new hero of mine.
And I'm 100% behind something that Bunny Pounds is doing. Encourage her, pray for her, and be involved. Be part of Christians actively engaged.
America is worth it. Now is the time. America needs your involvement. Please take our pledge to pray, vote, and engage. Join with a movement of other Christians that are doing these three simple things that can really impact this nation. Join us. Guys, it's another week of Conversations with Christians Engaged. Thank you for joining us every week as we go through topics about prayer, voting, and engagement. Every week, we're here to help educate you, inspire you, motivate you, empower you. And I'm so excited that I'm doing a series on history informing our present. If we don't know our history, how are we going to know what's happening in our present world? And how are we going to understand our future? We won't. Now, I'm here with William Federer. Dr. Federer is a nationally known speaker, best-selling author, president of AmeriSearch Incorporated, a publishing company dedicated to researching America's noble heritage. Bill's American Minute radio features broadcast all over America, and you can get his daily emails as well. They're amazing. Bill's first book, America's God and Country Encyclopedia of Quotations, has sold over 500,000 copies. And I love his books and all of his teaching. Thank you, Bill, for being with us today.
Bunny, great to be with you.
Well, I'm super excited to begin this series because I want to dive in to really our ignorance. We are ignorant as it relates to history sometimes, and we don't understand our current world because of that. You have an unquenchable thirst for knowledge and history. Did that begin when you were young? You got to tell me a little bit about this.
Yeah, well, my dad was an attorney historian, and so he was at several historical societies. So every vacation, we'd stop at French Fort, Spanish Fort, Indian Reservation, Civil War battlefield, Kit Carson, this. And so I knew that was out there, but I have to say, when I really became a Christian as an adult in my early 20s, it was like turning the corner on a cornfield and you see the rows line up. Same corn, but from one point of view, it's sort of meaningless. And that's the way they teach it in schools. It's like dates and numbers and facts. But when you see it from God's providential perspective, it begins to, God has a plan.
Yes.
And that's when it became exciting for me.
That is exciting. Well, you just, your knowledge of history and just everything you remember just is amazing. So tell us a little bit about how history should inform our present. We look at things that are happening, and a lot of times we're not really understanding the historical context, or we're not really seeing them clear because we don't understand our history. Can you give me some stories that can make that clear?
One of my favorite quotes is Arthur Schlesinger Jr., a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian on John F. Kennedy's staff. And the quote is, "History is to the nation what memory is to the individual." So have you ever met an individual who has lost their memory? Maybe they have Alzheimer's. It's really sad.
It's sad. I had a friend that she had Alzheimer's and she couldn't remember all the Bibles she had known before, right?
It's incredible. Sad. You can take anything away from them. We sort of have national Alzheimer's. We've lost our corporate memory of who we are as a people. And one of the things I've done in my studies is I research every single century of recorded human history. All the way back to Sumerian cuneiform and the Egyptians and the Elamites and the Persians and the Greeks and the Romans and Attila the Hun and Genghis Khan. And the most common form of government is kings. Yes. And ancient Israel, the first 400 years out of Egypt, they had no king. And that was the inspiration for the Reformation and for the colonial founders of New England. So in America, our memory is, we need to be we need to be reminded that we, the people, are the king and the politicians are the servants.
Yes.
Right? So Romans 13, well, you got to submit to the governing authority. Well, question, who's the ultimate governing authority in America? It's we, the people. Mm-hmm. The politicians are our servants. Well, we got to, it would be silly for a king to have to obey his janitor, right? I mean, so we, the people, are the king. Our politicians are our servants. And we need to, now it's not just a blessing, it's a responsibility. Because if things go bad, it's we, the people, who are responsible. And another thing is past behavior is the best indicator of future performance. So I tell people history is not prophetic, but it is predictive, right? Because you get to see how humans have acted in the past in certain situations. And so if we're in the certain situations, we can predict how we're going to act in the future. So it does give you some of that predictive ability. And there's a quote, to not know what happened before you were born is to forever be a child. And so I think that we, you get an identity of who you are. They say most of the men that are in prison don't even know who their dad is.
Wow.
And as a consequence, they have no identity and they're out on the street and they get a gang that comes and they say, we'll be your identity. Mm. And they, Dobson says that children are the undifferentiated stem cells, so to speak, of humankind. So what's a stem cell? That's where you have a cell that's brand new born, and if you, and it's undifferentiated, but if you bathe it with different hormones, it can turn into a skin cell or a muscle cell or an eye cell, and they can, you know, interject it in there. And so these children, they want to take them away from their families, take them away and put them in a classroom and bathe them with hormones of, and turn them into one of their woke activists or whatever they want. And even Plato talked about that. He says that democracy is doomed to fail because it's based on people having morals and virtue. And he says people really don't have morals and virtue. To give them a choice of giving up their life or giving up their virtue, they'll always give up their virtue to save their life.
Yes.
Now, ancient Israel's attempt to rule themselves without a king lasted a little longer because there was a magnet in the sky called God, and you were virtuous because you were accountable to him. But Plato says democracy is doomed to fail, and it's going to turn into chaos. First, you tolerate people that are a little bit off. Then you tolerate people that are a lot off till finally you're tolerating lawlessness. And then everybody says, we need somebody to come along and fix it. And that's when this philosopher king comes along and he's going to restore order. But the first thing he does is he takes the children away from the parents, brings them into the city and indoctrinates them with noble lies. That's what he calls it, noble lies. And he says, we want one single grand lie, which will be believed by everybody. And so here you have the government taking the kids away from the families and teaching them lies. But Plato says it's okay because the lies help the philosopher king stay in power. And since he's keeping order, because without him, they'd turn into a democracy, which would turn into chaos. The battle is who gets to teach the children. Mm. And you think of it, you're spirit, mind, and body. And so your mind is like a super fancy computer. It's more than that, but it's at least that. And your body's like the computer case, which makes it silly for people to argue over what color the computer case is. Imagine if I were to say blue computers are better than green computers. It's like, really doesn't matter what color the computer or the iPhone is. What matters is what apps, what software is running on it. Doesn't matter what color somebody's skin is what behavioral software is running on their brain.
Yes.
Is it love your enemies, do good to those that hate you, turn the other cheek, or is it cancel them, get them to lose their job, make them pay, right? And so the battle today is who gets to load the software on the next generation's brains. God chose Abraham because he knew he would teach his children.
Well, and history is important to God. I mean, remember the Israelites, they would set up memorials, they'd set up altars. He said, remember what I did, you know, call on the name of the Lord, the reputation of God throughout their history, their stories. And thank God for the Jewish people that kept the scriptures safe for us to be grafted into the Commonwealth of Israel. But, you know, I love this quote by David McCullough, who wrote 1776 and John Adams, among other popular books. But he said, history is who we are and why we are the way we are. What is your response to that? I mean, how does history actually shape who we are? And if we don't understand our history, that could be devastating.
Yeah, it's the trajectory. So you make decisions for the future based on where you came from in the past. And one of the strategies that's used by every conquering culture is called deconstruction. And that's where you say negative things about a country's past so they emotionally detach from it. Then you get them into a neutral where there is no memory of where they came from, and then you can brainwash them into the future you have planned for them. So that's what they do. They go into the classrooms and they tell the kids negative things about the founding fathers. They took land from Indians. They were chauvinists. They sold people into slavery, and the kids are like, ooh. Now forget the fact that they gave you a country where you're in charge of your life and all of us together are in charge of the country rather than having to obey a king with mandates. But forget all that. All the founders were bad.
Yes.
So these kids emotionally detached. Now they're in a neutral and they don't remember where they came from. And then you can brainwash them into, you know, the LGBT agenda or socialism or Sharia Islam. It's actually a sales technique. If I was a toothpaste salesman, the first thing I do is tell you negative things about the toothpaste you're currently using. You're still brushing with that stuff? Haven't you read it? It'll eat the enamel off your teeth. You're like, ooh, and you're repulsed by it. Now I have you in a neutral. You're open-minded. What are all the toothpastes out there? Then I give you my pitch for this brand new tartar control, breath freshener, enamel strengthening stuff, right? So it's a drive neutral reverse. And you see it throughout history. When the French Revolution happened, so Europe had 1,000 years of Catholic cathedrals, Protestant Reformation, and Jewish neighborhoods. But then the French Revolution happened. And what did they do? They trashed all that history. They tore down statues of good King Henry IV. They dug up the grave of St. Genevieve and trashed it. They cut the ties so that the people didn't know where they came from. John Lennon, imagine there's no heaven and no religion too. And so what's happening now in Europe? It's becoming socialist and Islamic, with Muhammad being the number one name for newborns. But it's not just Western culture. China, 3rd century BC was the warring states period. Half a dozen kingdoms fighting. One guy wins, Qin Shi Huangdi, and he gets criticized for doing things differently than they had been done for centuries in these other kingdoms. He got tired of being criticized. So he decided to destroy all history of how things were done before. He burnt tens of thousands of bamboo annal books. And then you have Islam. Whenever they conquer, they come in and they destroy the history. The oldest library in the world was in Alexandria, Egypt. And when the Muslim warriors in the 7th century came in, they went to Caliph Umar and said, what do we do with all these books? And he reportedly said, every book that does not agree with the Quran, destroy. And every book that does agree with the Quran is redundant because we have the Quran, so destroy them all. It took 6 months to burn them all. And then there was another sultan in Egypt, 832 AD, and he saw these pyramids with these tunnels that went to a stone wall. He goes, nobody builds a tunnel to a stone wall. There's got to be something behind. So he had his men build fires in front of the stone and for weeks would crack through it until they busted through saw all this gold with pagan stuff. So they destroyed every single pyramid. But then you look at the communists. When they come in, they destroy the history. Mao Zedong had what's called the Cultural Revolution in the 1960s. And he destroyed the oldest Buddhist temple in China and the Great Gates of Beijing. And they shamed anybody that was a doctor or a lawyer or had any Western taught. And so they had this mass of uneducated young people that had no memory where they came from so they could brainwash them into the People's Republic of China. Pol Pot did the same thing in Cambodia. He made 1975 the new year zero, said anything prior to that was irrelevant, and he killed anybody that wore glasses. He said if you wore glasses, you could read. If you read, you knew the history, and he wanted to get rid of the history. He killed 1/3 of his country.
Wow.
And so this idea of getting rid of the history, I mentioned the French Revolution, but during the French Revolution, they didn't want done in the year of the Lord, like our Constitution. So they made 1792 the new year one. Year one of the Republic. Year two. And they didn't want a 7-day week because it went back to the Bible. They invented a 10-day week, a decade week. And each day had 10 hours. Each hour had 100 minutes. Each minute had 100 seconds. They made every measurement. They said man counts with 10 fingers. So they made every measurement in France divisible by 10. They called it the metric system. Maybe that's why I never really liked the metric system. Mm. But they tore down churches, they tore down graves. They literally wanted to get rid of any vestige of Christianity, and it turned into a lawless mob where they beheaded 30,000 people in Paris and killed 300,000 in the Vendée. And out of that chaos, they get what? A dictator named Napoleon. And so, but this movement to erase history keeps coming back, but it's always done with a conquering power. And that's why if you don't want to be conquered, you want to know the history. 1984 was a dystopian novel. So utopian is a ordered future, and dystopian is a crazy future, you know. And so in the book 1984, there's a character named Winston, and he works for the government's Ministry of Truth, but all it does is lie. And his job is to edit history. And he's sitting at his desk, and down this pneumatic tube, like at a bank, you know, those pneumatic, that was a new invention in 1948 when he wrote it. He switched the numbers 48 to 84. So down the pneumatic tube comes this history that he's supposed to edit. And he takes out the real history and edits it. And then he takes the old history and puts it in another pneumatic tube that sucks it into the incinerator in the basement. It's called Down the Memory Hole. And he said, every record has been changed. Every date, every statue has been taken down. Every street has been renamed. Every, article. And he says, the past has faded in. He says that even if I know that I made the change myself, there's no record of it. Once the change has been made, the record's gone. Because the only record is inside my own mind, and I don't know if anybody shares my memory.
Wow.
The past is forgotten, and the lie becomes truth. Without God, without a supreme, absolute right and absolute wrong, what's wrong with spinning history if it can help you achieve your agenda?
Yeah. Well, and that's what we're seeing in modern America right now. We're seeing a revisionary history happening. And I know there's so many parents and grandparents that are concerned about what's happening. Number one, how do we get a hunger for history and connect people to what you're doing, Bill, as well? But what do we do? What do we do to make sure that our kids and our grandkids know what really happened in this country and know the Bible and know the things that are really important?
Well, one interesting thing that is research their own genealogy. Mm. So one school, it was a Christian school, they had each kid go ask his, you know, the parents, well, where did you come from? And then the grandparents, where did they come from? Well, they came over from Ireland, or they came over from Georgia, or they came, and they would learn as far back as they could get. And all of a sudden the history, like, oh, well, there's the Polish. And they were, for a while, they were a really big kingdom. And you know, who would have thought that Sweden founded Delaware and New Jersey, the oldest church in Philadelphia, is Old Swedes Church. Mm. But then the Swedish got conquered by the Dutch, they got conquered by the British. And but if they do their own family genealogy, it sort of is a beginning.
It brings it alive.
Yeah. But I do think that it's seeing it from God's perspective. Mm. So there's what's called philosophies of history. You go, philosophy of history? Yeah. The Judeo-Christian is linear. So
yes.
History has a beginning point and an ending point, creation, judgment. And every event is on this timeline moving toward the eventual day of judgment. Mm-hmm. And but there's the animist view of history, which is the pagan circle of life. Everything just keeps repeating itself and, you know, don't know really where it started, but it just keeps. And then there's the Marxist view of history that tries to reinterpret all as a class struggle. Always the terrible rich people oppressing the poor. There's the Islamic view of history where you can change it to spread Islam. Mm. So if they find out a little artifact that the Jews might have had a temple, their response is destroy the artifact. Mm. They're pushing their agenda of a caliphate with a one world government that's Islamic. They don't want any history to get in the way of that. But then there's the nihilist view of history. And nihilism, Nietzsche, God is dead. There's no purpose to anything is nihilism. And that's the way they teach it in the public school. It's just a bunch of disjointed dates, numbers, facts. And it's like, you know, Samuel Gomper started the Union. The Pilgrims did this. I mean, you know, Martin Luther did the Reformation, 1570. It's like, big deal. What about any of this stuff?
We wonder why the kids don't care about it.
And when you go from the nihilist view to the linear Judeo-Christian view, that's when you turn the corner on the cornfield.
It has purpose and destiny in the story of God then.
Yeah, that God had freedom spread so that people could love God back.
Yes.
And one of the things I did is, so the Hubble telescope, they focused it on a spot in the sky where there was nothing, size of a grain of sand held between your fingers, nothing there. After they developed the images, there's 10,000 galaxies in that little spot with hundreds of billions of stars in each one. And the thought is, why did God is so powerful, why did he make us? And you think, well, what's a galaxy anyway? It's a bunch of rocks. Hot rocks, cold rocks, a rock cannot love you. So it's almost like at some time in eternity past, God said, been there, done that, I can make everything. I would really like someone in my image that could love me. So out of all of creation, humans are the only ones that have the ability to love God back.
Yes.
Planets can't love. Animals follow instinct. I even looked up the word angel in the King James Bible, appears 289 times. Not one time is the word love used to describe an angel's relationship with God. Mm. Right? They're mighty beings. They're powerful beings. They worship God. They glorify God. The word angel means messenger. They deliver God's messages to the prophets, and they deliver God's judgments. They rejoice when a sinner converts. They sang when the stars were made. But the word love is not used in any verse. They're mighty beings or powerful beings, but they were made for a purpose. What purpose were you and I made for? We're not mighty. We're not powerful. We're not very smart, right? A king can have a castle with really strong soldiers and really smart staff, and then he can have children. Well, guess what? The word love is used all throughout the Bible to describe men and women's relationship with God. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Jesus rose from the dead, said, Peter, do you love me? So we're beings uniquely created with the ability to love God. And then he gives us the choice. And then Jesus paid for our sins. So the Lamb is God's way to love you without having to judge you, because he's a just God. But it's this choice. So when you realize not just history, but all of creation is now that God created us so that we could have a choice to love him.
Yes.
If God were to force you to love him, he himself would know he's forcing you to love him, and he would know your response is not a love response. Mm. So he'll never force you. So our human experience is God, in the context of everything he controls, time, matter, space, energy, he intentionally created one tiny thing he doesn't control, your will. I mean, he could control it if he wanted to, but that would defeat the very reason he made us different than everything else. And he doesn't need our love. He's not incomplete, and our love somehow completes him. He doesn't need our love, but he wants it. Parents don't need the love of their children, but they want it. And we're made in his image. And so the most important thing in our life is what? Well, loving and being loved. Could it be that loving and being loved is a big deal to God? So he loves everything he created, but could what he created love him back? And that's why he created us as free will beings. He created time, and he's outside of time, so he's still in control. We make our little free will decisions. He can readjust every electron in the universe.
Yes.
He has to hide himself behind his creation because he is so awesome. I mean, here's a being that creates a trillion times a trillion stars, all right? That if he appeared to us in all of his glory, we'd involuntarily respond. We'd fall on our face like the Apostle John in the book of Revelation. So he has to hide himself. People say, if God's real, why doesn't he show himself? Because the moment he shows himself, your free will's gone. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an involuntary response. And the same hiding of himself that allows us to have free will necessitates that we have faith.
Well, if we see history in that story of that God is after our heart, he's after humanity, then it makes these stories come alive. I would think it would take it from darkness into light and make it where, man, if we can see God in our history, specifically our family history and then our nation's history and, you know, church history, all of it, to see his hand in it, that makes history
alive. Well, and scripturally, that's the evidence that Jesus is the Christ. Mm. Because the Jews kept their history, and they kept the history of all the prophecies. In Islam, Muhammad was illiterate. He could never read and write, right? There's no like prophecies that he fulfilled or that he gave to be fulfilled. In Hinduism, they have the Vedas. I mean, these are sayings that they had, and they don't know when they came, where they came from and when they came from. They just have them, and there's no history to it. And then when the Huns invaded Europe, they were so illiterate, they asked them where they came from. All they could do was point to the east,
yeah.
You know. But the Jews and Christians were known as people of the book, because they knew the history. And it's because of the word, the logos, that Jesus could fulfill the promises,
yes,
that were written down in history of the Messiah coming. The seed of the woman will crush the serpent's head, the lion of the tribe of Judah, that all throughout the Lamb slain from the foundations of the world. And so God is a God of history. History is on our side. And you begin to see these patterns, and you begin to see God working in the past, and it gives you faith for him working in your life in the future.
So good. How do people find you, Bill, and find your resources and your books and everything you produce?
Well, thank you, Bunny. My website's AmericanMinute.com.
And check out Bill's daily email on history. I think it'll really inspire you and help you. As we close out here, Bill, why should every Christian pray, vote, and engage? And why is the work that we're doing so important to really empower Christians around the country?
You're showing God you love him and his word in your not just your thoughts, but in your words and in your actions. Mm-hmm. And again, it's imagine a guy, say, if he loves a girl, but he never says anything to show his love and he never does anything to show his love, you have to ask the question, does he really love her? Mm. And to say, oh, God knows my heart, but you're not saying anything to anybody about him and you're not doing anything. And then there's the verses in the Bible that says, rescue those who are unjustly sentenced to death. Don't stand back and say you didn't know about it. For the Lord who knows all hearts knows you knew.
Yes.
Defend the defenseless or defend the orphan and the widow. I mean, we're supposed to be doing something. So we're spiritual beings in a physical world. And we love God directly through praise and worship, but we love God also by loving people made in his image.
Yes.
Right? You got the commandments of loving God, but then there's the commandments of loving your neighbor. And so part of loving your neighbor is the good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. What kind of inheritance, what kind of country are we leaving to our children?
Yes.
If we leave them a country with less freedom than they had, and what's the biggest freedom? To have the gospel. But we see if we leave it alone, the movement of the government is to outlaw the gospel, and they're doing it in other countries, right? In China and North Korea and Pakistan and everything. The first thing, communist countries, first thing that goes is the Bible. And so if you really are a good person and want to leave an inheritance to his children, you want to be involved so
that
they can live in a country where they have the freedom to hear the gospel and believe, as well as all the other blessings.
So good. Well, you guys are going to have an opportunity to hear Bill Federer on our biblical conduct class in the future, coming out in 2024. And I just really appreciate you so much, Dr. Federer, for just really coloring history for so many Christians around this country. Connect with him at AmericanMinute.com and sign up today. And we'll see you guys next week. Thank you so much. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you so much for joining us for this incredible podcast. What in the time we've had. We love you so much. We love being in your life. Have you subscribed? Have you shared this with your family and friends? Please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, Rumble, wherever you get your audio or video pods. We need your help. This mission is undergirded by individuals just like you that support this ministry monthly, annually, and whenever you think about us, to be able to reach over 1 million Christians in the next 2 years. That's our goal. We want to empower 1 million Christians around America to pray, vote, and engage regularly. Will you help us? We're here to do that, and we need your help. I want to say thank you to our partners at The Stream. What an incredible online publication put out by James Robison and Life Outreach International. As we come together across denominational lines as believers to discern what God's saying about the news of the day and to hear from different viewpoints. Check out The Stream, make it your homepage, and get on their email list. This product is amazing. Also, our partners at Edify App, put out by Christian Post. This podcast app is a convergence of Bible teachers around America. We're excited to be a part of Edify App. Check out all their other podcasts. Thank you so much again for caring about this nation. We're here to help you pray, vote, and engage. We'll see you next week.